Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks tampering means going through the trash and looking for food. That's me. I'm talking about me. So today is Wednesday. It's actually the beginning of free agency, but that is a big lie because free agency has been going on for a while. In fact, as of this morning, most of the big fish have been netted, or perhaps even more shockingly, they've been traded. I guess, I don't know if you can trade a fish. Maybe like in Settlers of Catan, you can trade a fish. In any case, today is going to be a little bit different. I swear we're going to do a mailbag next week, so please continue to leave questions in your reviews. I've been compiling them into a list. They are great. But today is jam-packed. We've got three guests in the second half of the show. I am joined by Dave Damashek of the Dave Damashek Football Program and NFL Network. And then he's going to help me sort of look at the bigger picture of free agency and work through some feelings about Antonio Brown and hopefully resolve my feud with Pittsburgh media. In the middle of the show, Browns superfan Mike Ryan of the Dan Le Batard Show is going to join us for a special edition of Dinks and Dunks, all about OBJ. But first, I am thrilled to be joined by a woman who is such an NFL insider that she inexplicably has an extra N in her name. The extra N is for NFL. Right, Diana?
Oh, that's exactly what my parents were thinking, especially my mom when she gave birth to me on a very snowy day in the Bronx. She said, you know, this little munchkin, she's going to turn into this killer insider, all things NFL. In fact, she's so disappointed. She always wanted me to be a figure skater. So continue to disappoint her. Yeah. She thought that that's what my dream was going to be, but that was her dream.
That's very Korean of you guys.
Well, my mom is a tiger mom. She's a tiger mom. But is a tiger mom Korean? Or is it Chinese?
You know, just generally Asian, we do have our tiger moms. But I think Italian, there's some overlap there, you know. And by the way, I always spell your name, like I put so many consonants in it when I write it down because you got the two S's in Russini, and then I always add an extra N in Russini because I'm thrown off by the extra N in Diana. So when I write your name, it ends up with four N's, which is all for NFL.
There's actually a real reason why I have two N's. At the time when I was born, my parents say that Princess Diana, that name was very popular because of her. And my dad's like, I wanted to make it very clear, you are not a princess. So we wanted to make sure that the spelling of your name was different. So I just say double the N, double the fun.
You're a princess to me, Diana. So you're part of, before we get into all the craziness that's been going on, you are part of the group at ESPN that actually breaks news. So whatever craziness I have to endure, which basically consists of, you know, checking Twitter and reacting and making humorous faces, you were actually very plugged in and very anxious, I imagine. I picture you guys all, the NFL insiders, walking around with like five phones. I picture Adam Schefter with a Bluetooth and every orifice. That's a great visual. Like, what have the last couple of days been like for you, just logistically speaking?
No, it's certainly really intense. And I think what you picture is almost dead on to what it is. On Monday morning, I started my day at 6:30, and oddly, the first person I saw was actually Schefter. And he's just, you know, one of the best people I've ever worked with. So, you know, right away, he's like, what do you got? What are you working on? What, you know, and, you know, at the time I had, hey, I got this tip that Danny Amendola is going to the Lions. He's like, you got it. Do you have it right now? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, but I'm going to wait until 12:01, you know, when we can tweet. He goes, he was cut. Come on, get on it. What are you doing? Give me your phone. And I said, and I gave him my phone, which, you know, as an insider, you don't give your phone up to anybody, but you give it to Schefter, right? And I'm thinking, like, what's he looking for? He's like, I'm tweeting this for you right now. You are too slow. Come on. I was like, Schefter, I just walked in. So we like, you know, we put it out. It gets out there, and he gave me this look like, you better step your game up if you want to be on this team. He didn't say it, but I felt it. So from the tone was set and the foundation was laid, you know, but later on I saw him again and he's like, good job on the Amendola thing, by the way. I was like, you too, you tweeted it. So Schefter actually tweeted it from my phone.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love that your Adam Schefter impersonation is like Bobby Knight, by the way.
I don't know what it's like half robotic, but you know.
It got gruffer as it went on.
I know.
You know, I appreciate that.
And he was legit like disappointed. I felt like I was letting my older brother down. Like, come on.
I used to do the fantasy show on Sunday mornings super early, and I would come into the ESPN cafeteria and the only person there would be Adam Schefter. And I remember the first time I met him, he like walked over to introduce himself to me, super nice guys, you know. And when he walked back, I saw that he had somehow sent a tweet as we were talking. Like, it was, I was like, how did you do this? What dark magic do you employ? The man has like 20 hands.
The crazy part here at ESPN, everyone here knows, like, who Adam Schefter is, what he does, and these 3 days are intense for him, and he's the best at it. And on Monday, right after this disaster with the Amendola thing where he's yelling at me, I see him in the cafeteria. And as you know, Mina, here, the, you know, at noon, the cafeteria at ESPN is insane. It's Grand Central Station. And, you know, there's Schefter 10 deep online waiting for a sandwich while he's texting and tweeting. And I'm thinking to myself, you think someone from ESPN would go, you know, Schefter, just cut the line. Like, you can just go. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. Like, nope, the emergency room doctor who gets like to go through traffic or something, or like a special
siren on his head.
Schefter. He should have a siren on his head, or like a bodyguard, you know, that like pushes through the line for him and like takes care of menial tasks during this time. Well, he had a good week. I mean, you know, we saw what he broke and what he didn't break. We'll talk about Antonio Brown later, but before we get to that, like, I want to, you know, it's Wednesday morning and it's funny because today is technically the beginning of free agency, but everything's already happened, as I said. The biggest things have happened over the last couple of days, one of which, I mean, there's been trades. But before we get to OBJ, before we get to Dee Ford and some of the other stuff, I want to talk to you about Lev Bell. Okay, so that comes through late last night-ish. I don't know. I thought he was going to try to coincide it with the drop of his rap album, but it feels like, I guess, apparently we're hearing that the Jets gave him like a hard, you know, offer, and some of the teams that had been linked to him weren't actually in the running, like the Ravens and the Niners apparently were running, which is kind of crazy to me because they're already paying Jerick McKinnon. But the final offer comes in, 4 years, $52.5 million, 35 guaranteed, average of 13-ish. A little less than Todd Gurley, a little more than Dave Johnson. Do you feel like this is, like, we were associating Lev Bell with the Jets from the beginning, right? So do you feel like this is just the natural place for him? And how do you see it from the Jets' perspective?
I definitely knew from the jump that the Jets were all in on this. And most of the insiders knew this. And look, the Jets weren't really being secretive about it. It wasn't one of those situations when you talk to coaches and, you know, scouts and people associated with the GM, and they're like, yeah, you know, I don't really want to get into this. They were like, we want him. We're trying to get this done. In terms of his market, though, and other teams interested, there were rumors going around about the Ravens. Schefter tweeted late last night, you know, that the Ravens were never even in it. We actually knew that this entire time because, you know, I think people get this, but in case they don't, we're also talking to players, A, but we're also talking to other running backs in the market who are talking to these teams, and they have an understanding of what they're willing to pay and who else they're speaking with. So it was pretty obvious the agent of Le'Veon Bell was driving up that price, or at least trying to make it an attempt to look like more players were in the game. You know, I know there was one report about the 49ers, which there was truth there. But in terms of being all in, it was the Jets. But Mina, really for me, in terms of what was interesting while I was collecting information, you know, you're talking to teams about what they're going to do, but I love just asking about what they think other teams are doing because their perspective is always like, they're really honest when they talk about the other guys, you know? And, you know, the number I was getting in terms, of what other GMs and coaches thought Le'Veon Bell would get was between 11 and 12 million. And look, I know he wound up getting, you know, roughly what, 13.1. Mm-hmm. You got to assume some of that is Anthony Barr money, right? That maybe they padded on, they added, but those other coaches and GMs, they were dead on, about what range we were talking about in terms of money for Bell. And look, Schefter and Morton, I talked about this before the start of the legal tampering period of free agency. We thought he would get 15, 60 million per year. We know that the key for him was the guarantees, but we were a little surprised that once we started doing the work on the reporting end of it, all right, what do the other people think? We were not in sync with what the rest of the NFL thought. So, you know, in the end, look, he left 14 million on the table and this has got to be tough for him, not just from a financial side of it, Mina, but more just your ego, you know, to know that you didn't get the deal. Everyone's out here, players being, you know, proud of their deals and showing them off and, you know, congratulating each other. And look, he's still making great money for an organization that is invested in him. But we all know, we're all kind of whispering to each other, you didn't really get one. Yeah. You didn't get what you thought you were going to get.
So well, totally. I mean, obviously, there's no way to really truly quantify the risk of having, you know, playing that year and getting some kind of, you know, tearing ACL or something, right? But you're right. The money's there. We see it. We know what he wanted. I generally come from the school of, you know, don't pay running backs a lot of money. It's not, but I do like this for the Jets. They had the money, you know, and they could have gone and spent it on an average offensive lineman or something, or a linebacker. You mentioned Anthony Barr, who changed his mind. I just love what this will do for Sam Darnold, which is why I felt like it made sense from the beginning. You know, Darnold, he was really good the last month. He improved a lot over the course of the season, but he still struggled in short area throws, right? His completion percentage, I remember looking up at the time, was pretty low. And we know what Bell adds just as a multi-purpose weapon, not just as a runner, but also as a receiver, and combined with Jameson Crowder, another signing that I loved. I mean, you know, Robbie Anderson, who did they extend him, by the way? I think I saw something about that.
Yes, they did.
Robbie. Okay. So, I mean, this, I cannot overemphasize how much the gravity of having Le'Veon Bell on the field, what that does to defenses, you know, the single coverage, like what it will do for those wide receivers. So I love it for Sam Darnold. I mean, do you feel like the Jets offense could take a big leap forward now with those signings?
I do. My bold prediction, though, is that the Bills will be second in the AFC East after the Patriots. I still don't think the Jets move up. I know, coming in hot, Mina.
Their signings too, by the way. They're not sexy, and we're not going to talk about them as much, but I liked them.
Yeah, they're really not sexy, but they're good. There were some really smart moves there to improve. But, you know, I do think with Adam Gase, his offense, what he likes to run, Le'Veon is a great fit. I think taking a little bit of pressure off Sam Darnold, it makes a lot of sense. In terms of big picture of how he will fit, listen, I think he'll be fine in New York. You know, but that was a topic of conversation among other GMs that, look, if that
off the field stuff.
Look, if his number had dropped, let's say that Jets deadline came and Le'Veon was like, look, you know, this isn't going to work. And for whatever reason, his price dropped. There were a lot of teams that were interested. I can tell you that. That's where other teams were interested. But in having conversations with those teams that were waiting for that, maybe the fall, there was a concern about that character, right? So, durability, skill, and character is usually the three things they're looking for specifically in a running back. And there wasn't a lot of trust in who this guy is. Some of the issues with, you know, being suspended. We know all this. You know, and Mina, here's another thing too. Look at Adam Gase. Okay. What did he do in Miami when he became
culture
the
guy.
Head coach? Exactly.
Got rid of Landry, got rid of Ajayi. That was the one thing that made me doubt this might. I mean, obviously Adam Gase isn't, you know, controlling the money, but that was the one thing that made me a little bit skeptical of this.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Here's the other issue that I have in New York is you've got a GM and a head coach going in two different directions in terms of their career, right? Because, McCagnan is on the hot seat and Gase is the first time head coach. So you're the pressure and emotion there, obviously on two different sides of, you know, the realm here. And, you know, the point, I think I actually tweeted it, and I don't know if anybody liked the analogy, but I was looking at it as, look, I like some of these Jets signings, but I'm always going to go back to the idea of you don't want to go to the grocery store hungry, ever, right?
Well, I like that analogy. I saw you tweet that. I thought it was good.
Oh, because I once bought artichokes and marshmallows, and I was like, and I ate it, and I'm like, this is disgusting. I'll never do this again. But it fits here because the hunger represents the feeling and pressure of being on the hot seat.
We gotta do something. Yeah.
Gotta make it happen. And, you know, I do think in terms of who won this, I do think the Jets won this. The Jets absolutely won this battle in terms of the money and the position. And again, what he's gonna be able to do to help Sam Darnold.
I'm just super excited to see him in that, you know, it's Dowell Loggins' offense, which wasn't the most thrilling hire to me personally. Given his recent history. But again, just to go back, like the way this opens the playbook, you got to think that they're going to run a lot more play action. You know, you got to think, I mean, we know Le'Veon benefited from running behind that Steelers offensive line, and obviously the Jets aren't the Steelers offensive line, but he helps. He is just like, I don't know. He just makes everything easier for everyone. Assuming, you know, you're right to mention he has a lot of tread on his tires, but I don't know. People forget, I think, just how unbelievably talented he is and all of the different things he's capable of. And by the way, just thinking through the Jets, your point, by the way, about the GM and the coach potentially being on different timelines is really fascinating to me. But there's a plan, right? And contrast that with the Giants. I mean, you got to feel better right now as a Jets fan than a Giants fan by miles after last night.
All right, so we all know that story hits. Everybody reacts. I think we all can say we were shocked, even though, you know, we had heard a lot of rumors. I can tell you on Tuesday afternoon, I was getting text messages before the trade happened that had a much different tone about this being a possibility than what it had been a week ago. You know, which, by the way, tells you a lot about how the Giants feel. The fact that Odell was always sort of being shopped here. The fact that that was still a story after he got his long-term contract or his contract extension. Look, you look at the trade once you get over the hype of, oh my goodness, I can't believe New York got rid of the face of their franchise and really the biggest star in the NFL to send them to Cleveland for, you know, 13 draft picks, 5 in the first 3 rounds. It actually starts to make a little bit more sense, and it doesn't really appall me as much as just the timing of it.
Yes.
Give him the extension, give him the 5th-year option, franchise tag him. That's all you got to do. Which makes me believe in how you started this, which is it doesn't sound like they have a plan if this is what they did. Look, if I'm John Mara, I am so pissed today. I am pissed. You are spending my money.
Mocked.
You're spending my money.
I mean, and listen, I agree with you 100%. It's like, it's all about the timing that makes this so offensive to me, right? I was talking to, well, I was tweeting with, not actually having a conversation. I don't really talk to people.
We know you have no friends.
Wow, one of my internet friends and I were talking this morning. It was Mike Clay. And we were talking about Sashi and Sashi Brown, of course, and the Browns and the teardown and the plan. And I said to him, like, it's very fascinating to me, Diana, to look at this trade and look at the teams. And you had the Browns who had this teardown. They ripped it apart. They lost. It was supposed to be a 4-year plan. It's been 3 years. Now they're reaping the benefits. You can debate, you know, Sashi's picks and how he executed it, but that was the plan, okay? Then you got New York. And the most positive way to look at what you and I are talking about, which is this trade and the picks they got and stuff, is to say, okay, the New York's being honest with themselves. They know they can't win in the present. They know they got to rip it apart. And that's great. But that wasn't the plan last year. They paid Odell. That's why they have $16 million in dead money. They paid him over $20 million to barely play. And that's what's so offensive. Like, imagine a world, Diana, in which last year New York had just franchised OBJ, traded him, so they'd have no cap hit, right? If they had not taken Saquon, they traded down for a picks package, traded Landon instead of letting him walk, so they have all these picks like the Browns, and then they go into the next 2 drafts and they're gonna get either Tua or Trevor. Wouldn't you feel a lot better about that plan than where they are right now?
That sounds like a plan that works compared to picking Saquon instead of a quarterback in the draft, trading their best pass rusher for a guard, I mean, who is very good, right? They let
yes.
a talented DB walk for nothing. Some consider him a leader when they didn't have to let him go. And then they trade a top wide receiver after he paid them. So those are the things they've done in the last year that make you scratch your head and go, all right, well, it is obvious they're now officially blowing this thing up, rebuilding younger guys and investing in that. And look at Dave Gettleman's past, right? He's a scout and he has 13 draft picks coming up in this draft. And it sounds like maybe we don't understand what the plan is, but for him, I think he wants to go fishing there. I think this is where he sees the future of the New York Giants on top of starting fresh and getting rid of the headaches, which, look, we can debate all day, Mina. I've covered the Giants. I've been in the locker room. I've talked to them. We've done it. I feel like everyone has been on that story about who he is. He practices phenomenally. He's a good person. He's actually a sweetheart of a human being. But it doesn't matter where he goes. It comes with a circus. Kind of reminds me a little bit about Tebow when he was in the NFL and New England was talking about afterwards after they cut him he just came with a lot of bells and whistles. There was just like a lot that came. And while Odell has done all these little immature things, I still believe he'd never really truly match with that Giants culture. It just doesn't go with who the Giants are. And as talented as he is, the feeling there is, let's start over, let's start fresh. And you know, what will they do in the draft? From what I can gather, Mina, they're not going after Dwayne Haskins. And look, I get told stuff all the time, so I go on beautiful, amazing, talented podcasts like this to spread the word, to throw people off. But from what I can gather, they don't like Haskins. So I'm not sure what they're going to do with this number six pick. Are they going to go quarterback? Are they going to wait? Are they going to keep just rebuilding here and say, all right, next season's going to be a wash? But yeah, I'm not really sure what the plan is here, knowing that it doesn't feel like they're hot on Haskins.
Yikes. I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was, apologies, talking about how the Giants might have interest in Daniel Jones out of Duke, which I've just started watching my quarterback take, but that is bonkers to me. You know, way for Tua and Trevor. That's all I got to say that if you're not going to go for Haskins.
We started off talking about, like, guys left up on the board before the actual official start. Well, finally, Earl Thomas has found a home with the Baltimore Ravens.
Woo!
Finally!
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. As a Seahawks fan, as everyone knows who listens, that's fine with me. It's not San Francisco and it's not Dallas. I accept that into my heart.
Why did Dallas bother you so much? Because he wanted it so bad?
I just wanted to get NFC. You know, it's Dallas. You know, I don't know. San Francisco would have been worse. If Ravens, I'm okay with that.
And look, the Ravens needed somebody because we're talking about the Giants. The Ravens are a team I'm not really sure what they're doing either. Who are their leaders? Who are their, locker room go-to guys that are going to keep them? I mean, Lamar still has a lot to grow, or at least needs a lot of time to grow here. I'm not sure if they're going to wind up signing RG3, but I mean.
So Earl's 4 years, $55 million. So that Duke got paid. That's over 13, just under 14 a year. It's what he wanted. And to answer your question, I think he'll be a leader. I mean, we're talking about a potential Hall of Fame safety signing a multi-year deal, walking into the locker room. That's a coup for them. Diana, and maybe this is a good point to transition to kind of the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, which is this safety market, which I thought would be completely trash, okay, given the amount of safeties that were hitting free agency this year. It just felt like supply and demand was not skewing in their favor. Then, we've been talking about New York. Landon Collins walks out and signs this mega deal with Washington, a team you know very well, okay? So 14. So he's higher than Earl still. I like Landon Collins, and I think some of the box safety, he can't cover stuff, is overblown. I really do. Obviously, he struggled a bit last season, even before he got hurt. But that seems like an insane amount of money to me.
Oh, for sure. And from what I was told from talking to people in Washington, Landon Collins, from his days coming out of Alabama, I remember interviewing him at the Combine before one of his workouts. And, you talk to these guys at the Combine, they're so bright-eyed and excited, nervous too. And, usually when you ask a player, what's your dream team? Who do you want to play for? They will tell you the smart answer that they were coached up to say, which is usually, I just want an opportunity to show who I am. I'll go anywhere. And Landon Collins did not have that response to me. He was like, I want to be a Washington Redskin. And I was like,
really?
Is this on the record? He's like, yeah, I want to be a Washington Redskin. I spent my whole life watching film and looking up to Sean Taylor. And I think
every safety,
Yeah, right. I know. But with that in mind, though, I we know the owner of the Washington Redskins, has a, soft spot, so to speak, and a respect, obviously, for what Sean Taylor was and the legacy he left in Washington. And from what I gather, that actually played a role in going all in on him. I know that there were a few other teams that were interested in Landon, and Washington did what I think they do really well at times, whether or not their decision's right. But in terms of throwing the money at the guy they want when they want it, they do it. Dan Snyder will get a deal done if he wants the guy. And that's what they did for Landon Collins. And, quickly to circle back, I was just thinking about this, the Giants get rid of Landon and, Gettleman had some issues with his pass coverage. This is according to some people I spoke to in the building because I didn't understand it at first. I said, I'm in the locker room all the time. Landon's the leader. He's one of those guys that's looked up to, but His issues in pass coverage in Gettleman's mind was not worth the price tag mm-hmm. that he came with. But now you look at Jabril Peppers that they got. You got a younger guy, cheaper, and, you know, a first rounder.
Same skill set.
So, you know, the Landon Collins move doesn't bother me as much now that they filled it with Jabril.
Yeah, knowing that they replaced him.
Yeah, but, I do think the safety market was just saturated and everyone got paid. And they just.
So weird.
Totally dominated.
That's what's weird. I mean, you know, it's the draft, obviously, you know, and I've. Dave and I will talk about this a little bit later in the different positions and why so much money flowed. But I personally think, you know, safeties who can cover, you know, the center fielder types, the Earl Thomas types are a little bit more rare in this market, which is why I was so surprised he got paid what he did. I mean, I was pulling his PFF number. He's not as bad in coverage as people thought. He was actually pretty good at defending the slot. But, you know, it's just not, it's not his specialty. Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, like, he's a great culture setter, great leader. And obviously it was a chance to take a dig at, you know, a divisional rival. It didn't line up with the market for me, but like, none of these deals lined up with the market. And I want to wrap this up by talking about the other big deal. Kind of got buried last night amidst all of the craziness with OBJ and then Le'Veon, but Dee Ford gets traded to San Francisco, who immediately does a 5-year, $87.5 million deal. I believe it was for a second rounder in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
They had franchised him, and I don't hate this. I think it's too rich for him personally. I feel like it's a little risky given how much he struggled early on. But I love that the Niners, they need an edge rusher. They could potentially draft Nick Bosa, yada, yada. I want to ask you this, Diana, and let's end here. What are the Chiefs doing, man? Because their pass rush just went all the way out the window. They let Justin Houston go too, for those who don't know.
Yes, they did. You know, and you look at what you mentioned, you know, Dee Ford, you know, that 2014 first round pick for them. And he had a monster season last year. First two seasons, you know, stuck behind Justin Houston, Pro Bowl, you know, edge rusher there, Tamba Hali, and then had sort of a bit of a breakout. But the word there was always he was a little inconsistent. They weren't really sure. And yeah. He was very public about it, too. He was very up and down and mentally about, and he wasn't as confident as he wanted to be. But that said, if I could give you a quick answer, what are they doing there in Kansas City? They are going to the draft. They are going younger. They're looking to bring those guys on and build it that way. Is it the right decision? We'll see. But it's quite obvious that this is what they're doing by making these moves. And, you know, the Niners, by the way, you know, in $45 million guarantees there. I mean, there's another example of why free agency is not free. I hate calling it that because it's not free. You're spending a lot of money. And usually we look back on the first 48, I'll even say maybe 72 hours of this thing, and we're all, most of the time, those players are overpaid and the clubs have to eat it. But it's the only time where I feel like these are the days that if you're a player, you are cheering and you're watching Twitter and you're encouraging all this because the other days of the year, usually the club's winning.
The artichokes and marshmallows, these guys flying off the shelves. By the way, what you said about the Chiefs and the draft, I think is really interesting because we're going to do a lot of draft coverage over the coming month or so, but this is a major edge rusher draft. You're going to hear a lot about that. And perhaps the fact that these safeties are getting paid, Diana, suggests that teams don't regard the safeties in the draft where they are regarding the edge rushers, perhaps, or just, you know, the number of them. And so that would potentially explain the Chiefs' strategy. My strategy is to get you more on the podcast. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate the inside info.
It's my second time. I feel so honored.
I know.
I want a crown.
You're in the repeat club.
Let's go.
All right. Goodbye, Princess Diana.
Goodbye, Princess Mina.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right. So special edition today of Dinks and Dunks, joined by... Are you the biggest Browns fan at ESPN? I don't want to, like, you know, throw bombs here, but it feels like you are.
Man, I never thought about it in context of ESPN. I'm definitely in the top 35 media personalities that are associated with Cleveland Browns fandom. I feel pretty strong about it.
So that's Mike Ryan, producer of the Dan Le Batard Show. And he is here to answer five questions, as always, four from me, one from Lenny. Really, all five questions are about OBJ to the Browns. But before we get into it, Mike, I just want you to set the scene of where you were when you got the news and just paint a picture for us.
I was actually playing a weekly soccer game, and one of my defenders had an Apple Watch, and he got an alert on his Apple Watch saying, hey, I think the Browns traded for Beckham. And I was playing keeper at the time. I was like, wait, what? This is all as the game's going on. And it was towards the tail end of the game. It was actually a tie game. And on a goal kick, I passed to him, but I asked him for more details, and he was actually checking his watch for the full details of the trade because he said Peppers, but I wanted to know what the reported details were because he knew picks were involved. And he was sort of distracted by his Apple Watch, and he missed the ball that I passed to him, and I actually conceded the game-winning goal, all because of Odell Beckham Jr., but it was entirely worth it.
How many sugar-free Red Bulls did you drink afterwards?
Oh, yesterday was a three-canner. This morning we're already up to two cans because I'm just already just so jacked up on Odell Beckham Jr. Oddly enough, you know how excited I am. My first initial gut reaction was after I found out the details was to FaceTime you because you know how much this means to me. I just got a generational wide receiver that's a surefire Hall of Famer. This is incredible.
I have to say, getting that call from you, it is like being in the delivery room when the baby is born. Like, I feel honored and special. Like, I was called in wearing the surgical mask to see this beautiful moment. It was really special for me, too. First question, Browns record next year. Go.
They finished 7-8-1 last season. So I don't think it's a stretch to maybe they're the favorite in the AFC North. They have a tough road game in New England. They're scheduled. They play the AFC East. I'm gonna say 12 wins, which is insane. I can't believe that we're having this conversation. 12 wins.
And piggybacking off of that, how far do you think they'll go in the postseason then?
They'll host a playoff game if they're division champs. I don't know if that record will be good enough to get a bye. There's good teams out in the AFC West. I don't think they're better than the Chiefs. We'll see if the Patriots ever actually do start to ever get on the decline. But I think they're probably third in the AFC. Well, actually, arguably fourth. They're fourth with the Chargers. But the Chargers are going to have to play a road playoff game because they're not going to be a division championship. They're not going to win a division championship. So I'm going to say one playoff win, whether that comes, and it probably comes in the wild card round. And then they got to do some learn how to win.
You know, the realism coming from you this morning is not three sugar-free Red Bulls realism. That's like not even pants all the way down realism. I thought you would be like Super Bowl. I appreciate it. I think that's, you know, 33 years of Browns fandom talking. Question two. Would you rather miss every Browns game next year, skip the season, not be able to watch, or not gain 50 pounds?
I'll gain the 50 pounds.
To watch
I'm
the Browns.
I'm so excited for this Brown season. And, Mina, we're going to get primetime games, right?
They're
going to be a sexy primetime draw. People are going to want to watch this team. 98% of my football watching life, watching my team, has been Sundays at 1 o'clock. And now I have games, primetime games to look forward to. I'm so excited for this season. I've never been this excited for a Cleveland Browns season. They acquired my favorite non-Baker Mayfield.
Okay. Let me amp it up. Third question. Miss every Brown games, or you have to have Guy Fieri hair and a Guy Fieri goatee for 3 years.
Bring it on. I can make it work.
5 years. That's career suicide, Mike. That's career suicide.
No, I can spin that into a positive.
I mean, as you know, and listeners to the Levitar show know, I thought Stu Goss, that was just his look because of his avatar. I didn't, so, and I was perfectly okay with it. I thought it was a little weird that people liked him so much. Okay, question four. Rank your favorite Browns players 1 through 5 now that OBJ's on the team.
Ooh, all right. So Baker Mayfield obviously still occupies the top three.
Yeah.
So Baker Mayfield 1, 2, and 3. Number 4 is Odell Beckham Jr. And number 5 is Myles Garrett.
Question 5, as always, comes from Lenny.
Number 6 is Hollywood Higgins.
I heard you. Question 5 comes from Lenny. like OBJ's contract is a great deal. When he wants a new one in 2020, ends up skipping the season during a dramatic holdout at the exact year in which Tom Brady retires, how will you take it?
It's not going to happen. This is the honeymoon phase. He's going to get that money, I think, real quick from the Browns. This is when you pay
somebody.
And yeah, I think so. You just realter. I don't know. You're the expert here, Mina. Can't they just decide, yeah, we'll give you more guaranteed money? Can't they just do that? They have him on an annual average of $15 million a season.
Yep.
That's actually kind of a bargain.
It is. It is. That's why he's going to demand a new contract. I think you're right. I think they will pay him. It's all about structuring these things. But the team is so young that they could pay him a little bit earlier than the other guys, I think. So not to undermine my sassy.
Yeah, front load it while you have the Baker Mayfield rookie contract still. Front load it while you can. And keep in mind that the cap's going to spike, and his cap number will be really cap-friendly after that anticipated spike. So give him whatever guaranteed money he wants. Hell, guarantee him the whole contract. It's not my money.
Mm. Mm. All right, congratulations, bud. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you for having me, Mina and Lenny.
Pre-agency, it feels a little like promposal in a word that I don't want to say ever, or, you know, like, I just don't like it. But it is, honestly, Dave, this has been one of the more active after I said I will never say it, I've said it six times since then, but this has been one of the more active legal tampering periods. Right now it's Tuesday afternoon, and an extraordinary amount of money has gone around.
Yes, that is obvious, and along with it, of course, one of my least favorite things, and that's saying something, because the time between, say, the very end of college football season to through the draft, there are so many tent poles of annoyance that we must revisit annually. And this is one of them, which is specific right now. The, oh, my God, that guy got that much money. What's happening? Yeah, I don't know if everybody heard. The NFL makes a lot of money. And the salary cap went up. What did everybody expect was going to happen here?
For those who don't know, I'm joined today by Dave Damashek of the Dave Damashek football program, on which I was once... Wait, is that the right name for it? Did I already mess
That's
it
right.
up? That's right. Okay. DDFP, of which I was once a guest. Some say the best guest ever. Many say, actually. It was voted on, I think, right? There was a real vote.
Well, you did get some support internally, but ultimately, our mutual pal Will Brinson is a past Shecky Award winner for our favorite non-football playing guest. This year, the award went to Mo Damashek, my mother. Tough odds for you. She was the heavy favorite going in, and no big surprises here.
Sounds like a lot of bias went into that decision. The people's favorite, I was. And I agree with you about the moaning and groaning right now to an extent. Some of these deals are crazy.
Listen, there is no question that, yes, in a finite amount of room that is the salary cap, yes, some of them seem more questionable than others. I'm just saying the overall idea of these heaps of loot. Yeah, that's what happens in professional sports in America in the 21st century.
It's weird because we knew the cap was going up. 10 million-ish, 11 million to 188.2. And we knew there were a bunch of teams with oodles of cap space. Yet I feel like we still didn't anticipate that average to above average players would be receiving these kinds of contracts. And I think that might be what's jarring people. It's the names being associated with the dollar figures, which again is another thing we should have anticipated because there weren't a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, Nick Foles is the best quarterback, enough said. And then there weren't a lot of elite pass rushers that weren't going to get tagged. So once you take away the two most expensive positions in football, obviously, you know, we're going to see money flowing to other areas. I mean, is there any other reason why you think, I don't know, there's so much shock and awe happening right now?
No, I think, I thought I was very brassy a few weeks back when I talked to, here comes a name drop. I was speaking with Matt Ryan, ever heard of him? At the Super Bowl, and I thought I was being bold and courageous by asking him, a guy who is often held up as being on that border of is every quarterback, every tenured QB who makes 20 plus million, 25 million, et cetera, just because you have to pay that to retain a quarterback services doesn't mean that every quarterback is worth that much. And that ongoing debate, which I have participated in for the last couple of years. And so I said, you know, what's it feel like when your name is floated in that conversation all the time? And he said, it's really a little bit antiquated, at least that, or for this upcoming free agency. He nailed exactly the way it's going here because you hit on it. You know, a lot of those QBs have been paid now already. And with the cap going up, it's kind of a conversation about nothing. Maybe in 2020, when Jared Goff is up, that will be the next time where we see, is this guy, let's see what happens this season first with Jared Goff, but is this guy, are we going to invest that amount of loot in that guy? And in the meantime, as you touch on, the one QB who is out there and getting that kind of loot that has me scratching my head just a little bit is Nick Foles. So, I think you hit it exactly right. There aren't quarterbacks out there, so that money is there for the teams to spend, and that's the issue, isn't it, always? It's like, I think your Seahawks were the first ones to figure this out, that when you have that QB on the rookie deal, you can spend on luxury items around him, and the 49ers simultaneously were doing some of that. And, you know, 2019 seems to be like a year where you can flesh out a bit of the roster around that QB.
Three things. One, did Matt Ryan use the word antiquated? Or did you just say that?
Let's say he did. Yeah, I think he did. He also, you know what, the better. I'm sorry, I buried the lead on that. He told the tale. I asked him why number two, of all numbers, number two.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, growing up, he was a, and he was not joking. He said the big QB at the time when he was growing up was Tim Couch. And so you've exceeded the professional career of your hero now.
We had a question, I think it was on the Adam Lefkoe episode of my podcast, about who the most underrated quarterback was. And Matt Ryan just rolled off my tongue, and it felt good. And I think that's going to be my thing. Because he was really good last. I think he was inarguably underrated last season because of what happened with the Falcons, and he actually was quite good. So I'm going to be a Matt Ryan person. I feels good to come out as a Matt Ryan. Because for years, you and I were brethren in the Philip Rivers is underrated fan club. But it feels like that's kind of jumped the shark, right? Like, too many sports writers are on it.
I completely agree with you about that. I am kind of, I want to get there with you with Matt Ryan because he's a delightful fella.
He's good.
And, you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, even before the MVP season, the thing that he didn't get much attention, he kind of became a different guy. He shed what looked to my eye, at least. It looked like he lost like 20 or 25 pounds or something and suddenly became, nimble adjacent. I'm not going to say that he was, RG3 in his rookie year, but he moves much better than he did in the first part of his career. And I'm kind of with you. You don't like where I'm going to go now.
Oh,
and I
no.
bet you, you know, I still think for all the commercials and, all the debate about him, the guy who still is a little underrated is Cam Newton. He still doesn't get the respect that I declare he deserves.
We've hashed this out a few times. I'm a Cam Newton supporter. This is what I hate because really we're arguing between when we've had this disagreement, this squabble. It's really a matter of like, should Cam Newton be the 10th or 13th best quarterback? Like that's probably how far apart we are on it, but I'm with you. Well, that was my number one. My number two thing was I enjoy how you use the word loot instead of money a lot. It's charming. Antiquated, you might say. Number three is I want to talk about the Foles thing before we get to my feud with Pittsburgh media, which is really why I brought you on to broker a peace agreement. We got to talk about that. I know. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about the Foles thing because, man, that's a lot of loot. Okay. I gasped when I saw it. We did a roundtable, Dave, like the NFL insiders. They always ask us to predict contracts, and every single one of us predicted that the Foles to Jacksonville contract would come in kind of like a little bit above the Case Keenum contract from last year, so like 2 years, $45 million. Dude got 50 guaranteed. I mean, what?
Yeah, you know, And everybody says what a nice guy he is and everything. So, you know, I'm not if it was a bad guy, still, you know, that's what he could make. That's what he made. The question that I have though is, and I understand there's a lack of other options right now, but is Nick Foles really the savior for what happened in 20? Is he going to make right what went wrong for that team last year? This notion that, this is just what the Jags needed. They needed a game manager who takes care of the ball and turns it back to the defense to grind it out. Is that what's going to win in the AFC South? It doesn't seem like you're paying attention, Jags, to what else to the rest of the division. Is the Jags defense, as constituted, that far superior to to the defenses in Tennessee, Houston, and Indianapolis? I don't see it that way.
And it got worse because they had to cut dudes to make room for Nick Foles. And by the way, they're going to have to pay Jalen Ramsey and some of these players. And, you know, Yannick Ngakoue? I tried. And that's my – last week I had Warren Sharp on. We were talking about Nick Foles and the contract. And I asked him a question. I said, would you rather, if you're the Jags – trade for Josh Rosen or pay Nick Foles? And at the time, I felt like I could understand why you would go in either direction. Versus this contract, I take Josh Rosen every time.
Absolutely, because of what you just said. And, you know, I will discount what I said 5 minutes ago about the ability to flesh out the roster around your QB. Because, I mean, the Jags have had to rob Peter to pay Foles. And would that have been better if I'd said Nick? Would that have been closer? But either way, yeah, it's very strange. You could have had a rookie, a talented rookie, on that deal. And the thing that I really hope doesn't happen in Jacksonville or anywhere else, and yet I know it's going to, is, you know, I bet you Denver is going to do this, is the weird inability to recognize by NFL teams in the 21st century, in the age of free agency, that I call it the 1+1=0 QB paradox of the 21st century. At what, you know, in the age of free agency, this notion of learning at the knee of a savvy vet is foolish at best, in my opinion. Yes, I understand Patrick Mahomes, but by the way, I'll push back at everyone who says that would have been too early. 2017 would have been too soon for Patrick Mahomes. Well, I guess we're never going to know. I always will at least be able to defend the hypothetical that would they have not won double-digit games if Patrick Mahomes had been their starting quarterback instead of Alex Smith 2 years ago? And then you can go way, way back to Aaron Rodgers taking over for Brett Favre. But there are few examples. At best, I would say Mahomes is the exception that proves the rule that if you're going to burn a first-round pick in the age of free agency on a QB, you should feel compelled to start playing that quarterback as soon as possible. Look at Cleveland. Maybe they would have been a playoff team this past season if they would have gone with old Bake over Tyrod at the start of the season. Now we'll never know.
And also with the Alex Smith example, I think that's it drives me crazy because, or the Mahomes Smith. Alex Smith was good. Okay. So, you know, the cost was different because they knew they could still compete with him. It wasn't like they were trotting out, you know, the desiccated husk of Eli Manning in New York. Like this, that he could win games for them in that offense. So it was frustrating to me. I think generally when we look at this free agency palooza explosion of money or whatever, I don't mind these teams spending money on players they need, players who are good, but I get confused by things like the Foles thing when the market isn't there, right? Like when you look at Jacksonville and I don't think I heard a single team tied to Nick, like, realistically, Dave, tied to Nick Foles other than Jacksonville. Who were they bidding against? You know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, there's a lot of things that don't make sense with the market, like all these, the Landon Collins. I mean, I like Landon Collins and I don't understand why all these safeties, not really all of them, Collins and Tyran, are getting that kind of money because there's so many safeties on the market. Like, you have to look at these things collectively.
And, I mean, and it's especially ironic a year removed from the off season when no one wanted any safety. No, I mean, that's why it's weird. Now there are more good safeties on the market than there were last year. and the ones that the people seem to desire are making heaps and heaps of loot. I have no explanation for why that difference year to year. It's specific to the safety position.
Okay, so you guys know Antonio Brown obviously traded for nothing, and then signed this massive contract with Oakland. I think he's averaging $19.8 million per year, which is the highest amongst wide receivers. So they restructured that deal, and we've gone through.
Devin Funchess didn't jump that?
That was $13 million for Funchess? And you know what, Dave, again, to solipsistically reference my own Twitter, less than 20 minutes before I tweeted, love that the Colts are sitting on their hands in free agency. Smart teams don't budge. Which basically ensured that they were going to do something stupid. What can I say? I worship at the altar.
By the way, let me just say this. I'm sorry to interrupt you ambush the Steelers or the Pittsburgh media thing. It is funny to the point I just made a couple minutes ago. The Colts, I completely get it. And it's sort of, I don't know if it's a 50-50 split, but there are always those people who say, exactly like you just said, respect for the Colts. You know, they have this money and they don't need to feel desperate because that's not the Ballard and Reich formula 1 year in. That's not what made them successful a year ago. So why deviate from that? There's part of me that says, especially given what we're hearing, and by the time people are listening, maybe Le'Veon Bell is the richest human being in the history of people or something like that, with the Jets or whomever else. But shouldn't the Colts, I mean, they are, doesn't it feel like the Colts could be in the Super Bowl if you drop Le'Veon Bell? It'd be hard to reduce that, to ignore that temptation if I were those guys. I know what we're doing here and overall, but if we can just drop 26 into this mix here, how far off from the Super Bowl this year are we? We can't be too far away. And by the way, I talk about the collective wisdom of, you know, a decade or so ago versus what exists now. It is sort of like the Le'Veon Bell thing. Like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, everybody said, oh, guy can't take a whole year off. You can't miss a full year of football. You'll never be the same again if you do. Now, the collective wisdom is, oh, he's going to be nice and fresh. Lev's going to get he's going to be good. He needed a break from the wear and tear. And the same thing goes for the smart franchises, the steady franchises. Don't try and win free agency. They wait to win in autumn. That was the rhetoric of the, I don't know, 10 years or so ago.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, the Patriots with Revis and the 2015 Broncos and their defensive ads and the Rams of this past season and so on.
Right.
A lot of legitimate contenders, obviously, are big players in free agency. And so I wonder, like I say, if Ballard and some other teams out there kind of like, well, if we're just a piece away, I wonder if, in fact, that's what informed what Jacksonville just did there, except I just think they chose poorly. Like, all right, yeah you think you're a missing piece away. We just need a good quarterback. I don't know if you've noticed that. I don't know why the football gods work the way they work sometimes, but for whatever reason, they like seeing Nick Foles in that deep green of Philadelphia, whether Chip Kelly or someone else was the head coach. I don't know that the football gods are going to smile on him in teal. They haven't smiled on him in any other uniform besides that Eagles uni.
That's, if he does play well in green, in the teal, then maybe it's just any shade of green for Nick Foles.
Well, that's what we'll find. That's what, that, Mina, is what we're about to find out.
Big check, Nick. Gosh, I got to address the Colts thing. I think I'm going to exercise some patience and wait to weigh in on everything they do in free agency, because obviously they are exercising a lot of patience. You know, we praise teams in that voice you did, sitting on the sidelines, being conservative, not overpaying. But those teams tend to be ones that don't have a lot of gap space because they've been good year to year, you know. So they're a little bit unusual. I will wait to see. I mean, I would have liked them to grab like an Adrian Amos or something, and they haven't. So, but I'm going to wait on that. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be patient like Lev Bell.
I also feel like, and I have no evidence to prove this, but, you know, I, I work in reckless speculation. That's my see. I'm not like you. See, you gave yourself the higher standard of like I'm going to work in facts and in statistical evaluation. I just recklessly speculate. It's much easier. I suggest you give it a try. Something it's much nicer. Then you know it requires much less back, much less homework. But with the Colts, I wonder if they're going to be the latest example of the insider's darling. A lot of people.
Absolutely. They already are.
Where they're like, see. We figured it all out, yes. Football. Everybody yes. else doing it one way. And look, we just came in here and now we're all set. I wonder if they'll get their comeuppance in 2019. That'll be interesting. Don't be too satisfied there, Ballard. You can add some nice pieces there with all that loot you have.
I know. He's just sitting on his loot like Golem and like, you know, not actually Golem. Had the ring, so it wasn't
he
like
just had he, the ring. He didn't have
want
really
people
money,
to
but he
come
didn't,
after the
he
ring.
He didn't care. He yeah. lived in a cave until he
right.
dropped
this
it
analogy,
to the bottom
yeah.
of the sea.
He's more like a hoarder right now, like a woman in a house full of cats, and then you open the door and the cats are in there. But that doesn't really make sense in here because cat's not currency. But you get it. You get what I'm saying.
I'd like you to keep working on that, but all right.
Okay. Well, the idea is like he's got all this money, but then he refuses to spend it because he's being stingy, which is not really a hoarder. That's more like Ebenezer Scrooge, if Ebenezer Scrooge had the best draft in recent NFL history. I am also that person who loves conservative teams in free agency, and then when I have an auction draft, spends 80% of her salary on Odell Beckham Jr. So I am in no place to weigh in on the conservatism of. And that didn't work out so well for me. Other thing that didn't work out so well for me, feuding with the entire city of Pittsburgh. I need you, Dave. I need to work through this with you. I need you to vouch for me, really, because I lost a lot of, lot of love in the city of Bridges. Is that what it's called? No. City of
Steel Town, you could call it City of Champions. We
I
still
love
own
Pittsburgh.
That, by the way. It's a glorious place.
But I burned all those bridges because I committed the mortal sin of pointing out that at one point, Antonio Brown was underpaid. Didn't say that he was underpaid now or that it justified any of the nonsense he's gotten into, and it is nonsense, okay? Quitting on your team, that stinks. I'm not pro that. He was honest. He's a Hall of Fame receiver, and at one point he was underpaid. That was how the feud started.
I completely get it, and I will also say, because having been to Studio 66 at the NFL, that I have one rule and one rule only, and that's no jive. No jive, I see how somebody could read that and say, underpaid, you were not saying unfairly.
Right, that,
or
thank
the
you, thank you.
The system. Or
they were
like
smart.
That. He was a
That's
low
how
rep.
Teams should
right.
do things.
What I think people wanted you to acknowledge was, clearly, I know you already know this, was that, yes, because he's a low-round pick, he was outperforming that very quickly. But way back when, Mike Wallace, or Antonio Brown. You're not going to be able to keep both of these guys. So the Steelers, depending on who you talk to, did Mike Wallace not get that offer? Was he offered and turned it down? Either way, Antonio Brown is the guy who got the offer. They considered him more valuable. So ahead of schedule, he ceased being underpaid. So I think that's what people wanted you to acknowledge.
Yes.
That they went to him proactively. Because they were in a bind. Well, we don't want to lose both of these young receivers, so we're going to keep one or the other. And so before they technically were required to give him his value, to pay him his value, they jumped it and started paying him that in advance.
One of the most brilliant contracts in recent NFL history, a credit to Pittsburgh. Like, I don't think teams should overpay guys. I've just been ranting about overpays. I was trying to praise Pittsburgh. By the way, you mentioned Mike Wallace. I remember it was during Antonio Brown's underpaid contract that Mike Wallace went out, and I think he got paid more than them, right? Who gave him all that money? It was like in 2015 or something.
Was it Miami?
Miami, yeah.
I can't remember. I know that fans, here's the thing. I mean, what we're talking about is, and these are reporters in Pittsburgh, not local fans. Or
You're
I guess you're probably getting it from from fans. Yes. Fans tend to play it much classier and much closer to the vest than the media does. I mean, that's the cautionary tale. I feel like fans and even local media are trying to speak into being the reality for Antonio Brown. Careful what you wish for, AB. And it does feel like he maybe has now launched himself into the second half of his career into being the next TO. I mean, it's hard to argue against that now that he's left. At least, you know, we can forecast likewise that, well, Antonio Brown just went to a worse team. Well, the Steelers are likely to be worse without 84 and without 26. But nevertheless, I do like the Mike Wallace and Santonio Holmes and T.O. and Chad Ochocinco and so on and so forth. It could get into one of those situations where Antonio Brown, we see him in three or four different uniforms before he hangs it up.
So, I went back and forth with this with my colleague Kevin Van Valkenburg about Roethlisberger in particular, but just generally. I mean, the quarterback becomes the team at a certain point, you know. And you see this in Seattle with Russell Wilson, how everyone turned, all the Seahawks fans turned on Richard Sherman when it became clear there was a fissure between him and Russell Wilson. You know, Richard Sherman is one of the greatest players in Seahawks history. He's responsible for the single most exciting football moment of my life as a Seahawks fan. But when he turned against the quarterback, you saw fans immediately get in line behind the quarterback. That's just, I think, the quarterback, you know, your team's not going to move on from the quarterback, right? You know how I've always felt about the drama in Pittsburgh. We've talked about this before, which is I feel like everyone's to blame. Everybody, okay? And maybe you can.
That's the correct answer. That, by the way, is the correct answer. However,
right, like, I mean, maybe some are more
playing blame.
Yes,
if you want to assign
Mike Tomlin, Lev, Ben. I mean, the only person who's not to blame is poor Juju Smith-Schuster. He just wants
kind of right. That's kind of right. First of all, though, kudos to you. I want to acknowledge that you are fanning the correct way. That big moment on your rise to Super Bowl glory, Richard Sherman's pass breakup, I assume that's what we're talking about, Crabtree,
yes,
right?
That's my favorite.
That's the moment.
Favorite game, actually.
That's the best.
But I want to ask you something about Pittsburgh before we, and about how we got here. Because, like I said, I think interpersonally how we got here, in terms of the drama, you know, Kevin Colbert coming out and saying what he did about Ben, everybody needs to, they all screwed up. I really believe that. You can argue different people screwed up more at different times. But interpersonally, I don't think anyone's coming out of this with totally clean hands. Tomlin as a manager.
No,
of all
but
this.
I also think, and it goes without saying, the reasons why Roethlisberger is sort of people are very willing to accept he's a jerk kind of narrative. He's not a nice guy.
Well,
he's not a good teammate.
Well,
people are willing. I'm not defending anything. I'm talking about as a football guy and how good he is. I think people even
as a teammate
will conflate. Right. People will conflate those things, and he's not that good. He's overrated as a player. Obviously, that is silliness, but in my opinion, at least. I do think, and whether he deserves what percentage he deserves of it, whatever, I do think we're getting a little out of hand with making him the martyr for all the sins of the high-end quarterbacks. I know people will say, Joe Flacco was always a great teammate. Yeah, Joe Flacco's not on that level. I'm talking about Breeze and Peyton and Brady. And that. Who are these guys? This stuff from the silver screen that I think people imagine, the mythologized, he's a guy who everyone wants to play for. He makes everyone around him better quarterback. That's Brett Favre. And to some degree, Tom Brady. But still, Tom Brady did have Jimmy Garoppolo traded away.
I'm going to get in it. The radio stuff's weird, dude. The stuff where he goes on the radio, that's weird. You and I have followed and read about a lot of quarterbacks. It's odd. Don't do that. Why can't you just stop doing that? Because
I'm not defending him. I'm doing the much the much beloved in the 21st century whataboutism, WC. Haven't you seen Aaron Rodgers wildly gesticulate on the field? He didn't even wait for a microphone. He just right there on the field. Oh, he just right there. Not there. I wanted you to cut in. I wanted everybody under the sun to understand That wasn't a bad throw by me. The receiver ran the wrong route. Peyton Manning did that. Peyton Manning called out his entire offensive line after a playoff game in January of 2006. No one's clean. Who are these people? Brett Favre is who everybody imagines the quarterback is supposed to be. But there are very few, if any, examples remaining here.
You know who's clean? Matt Ryan, the nicest quarterback in the NFL. No, what I wanted to ask you, Dave, this is running super long, but I don't care. What I wanted to ask you was not about the interpersonal stuff, because, like, I'm sticking to my guns that everybody sucks in this situation. But I wanted to ask you about the money stuff.
Make it clear, I agree with you. That's the main point. I'm just mounting a tepid defense. That's all.
Yeah, I'm with you. I get it. But the money stuff is what I want to ask you about, because that's what I found so fascinating about how we got here with Lev, but then especially with Antonio. And, you know, for those who don't know, basically Pittsburgh, they signed him so he was underpaid. I will die on that hill, Pittsburgh media, at one point. But then he wasn't. Okay, they gave him this extension. They rewarded him, made him the highest paid receiver, yada, yada. Pittsburgh has a kind of unique way of structuring contracts. They gave him this big bonus. It was all in the bonus. And then they restructured, I believe, to accommodate Le'Veon. And that's how you get to the point where he's basically uncuttable, right? Because if they cut him, you get nothing. So they were desperate to trade him. And even then, they've got this outrageous, insane, bonkers, depressing, if I was a Steelers fan, I'd walk into the ocean forever cap hit. Now, do you blame the front office for how we got to that point? Or do you feel like, and does it make you sort of worried about sort of their way of doing things? Or do you think this is just kind of a perfect storm of once in a lifetime bizarreness?
No, I lean to the former, because I think, I guess, like I was saying, the 1 year sort of a little too self-impressed what the Colts brain trust might be. I do think that the Steelers haven't necessarily been as adaptable, in part because, for real, I think there's something to that, that, you know, I think the Rooney family is, you know, outside of football is, you know, is an admirable group and all that kind of stuff, the way what they've done for the city. But I do think that there is a resistance to change when you've had the success that they had had coming into, you know, into the last, let's say, 10 or 15 years. There's been a resistance to acknowledge the changes that seem apparent to the other contenders out there. Specifically, I think about, I think you can explain away the free agency thing a bit by what you said earlier about that if you're generally in contention, you don't have as much free money to spend at free agency time. But I always refer to Dick LeBeau. In the last 3 or 4 years there of his tenure, the ongoing thing was even if a guy was a first round draft pick on the defensive side, they would puff their chests out collectively and say, hey, this youngster, it takes 3 years to really get to fully grasp what Dick LeBeau's scheme is all about. Well, that's a bad scheme then. Do you hear about free agency? The guys are so he's going to get it and then he'll be right on the edge of it's time for him to go. That's not a good approach to things in the 21st century. Obviously, Belichick has been the most adaptable, and that, not coincidentally, is why they've had so much success. But I think the Seahawks have shown and an ability to be more fluid with the changing times. And maybe the Steelers haven't been, and they have been, I'll go way back to where we started, a little antiquated in their approach to things.
I just realized, speaking of where we started, that not only did I take 5 minutes to introduce you, I never established you as a Steelers fan as I started talking about this. So many assumptions.
I feel like it's broken through. And besides, everybody knows where I come down on all these things already. In society, because of Twitter.
Everybody knows who Dave Demeshek is. Everybody knows what he stands
because
for.
Mina Kimes has retweeted me once or twice, and that's how more people than not know.
You wanting some more retweets? Is that your way of? Will you retweet?
This podcast. I'm not going to completely give away my dignity. If that's what you're looking for, I won't do it.
You gave away your dignity the second you agreed to do my podcast. Thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Mina Kimes, anything for you. You're one of the greats, and I don't just mean talents. One of the nicest people I've come across in my 37 years in the business.
Am I the Matt Ryan of podcast?
I'm going to say above that. You're definitely, wow. One thing's for sure, you're definitely better than, you're more than the Tim Couch of podcasting. I'll say that.
Yeah.